All right. You get it out of your system. You ready to
go? Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I am not Brandon Rhodes. I am Aaron Flores.
That is correct.
We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We, as you know by now, are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication, and the internet, etc.
That's right. And today, spicy ginger beers.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Tell me about that one you're drinking there.
This is a AJ Stevens Jamaican-style ginger beer, Jamaican-style bottled out of Boston.
Really?
Something doesn't
quite add up there.
Apparently, someone from Boston vacationed in Jamaica and thought, I'm gonna copy this thing.
There you go.
I've got the money to macro brew this.
That's right, yeah. Well, hey, it made its way over here to the West Coast.
But yes, it is pretty awesome. It's very spicy.
It sufficiently singed the back of my throat. And that's the kind of ginger ale that I like.
Yeah.
More than the overly sweet kind.
Part of why I got it for this show is because I knew it would last me the whole show.
There you go.
I could do nothing but sip on this thing.
You would not be tempted to down it in one long glug.
Even if I was, it would be impossible.
the sting, the scourge to your body would be too much.
Yes.
Yeah. I did get, Reed's Ginger Candies. Adele found a package of those.
Oh.
Yeah, it looks like a package of cigarettes.
The same company that makes the...
The same that makes Reed's Ginger Ale. Yeah, or Ginger Brew, I think, is what they label it as. But it's really, really strong. It's a great little ginger chew. So, yeah.
Nice.
And you can roll it up in your sleeve and look badass. So, anyways, that is that. And we are here. We just did a 100-mile ride.
We did.
We did 105 miles.
If I'm talking about what I'm drinking, you should probably talk about
Right. Well, actually, it's not here with me. I drank an Alaskan Amber Ale because we pre-taped an interview segment with Laura Moulton of Street Books. Anyways, that empty bottle is out in the other room. You'll hear that interview after the break. And now we're doing our bullshitting and whatnot here, having taped the interview. Now we can relax and be ourselves.
Yeah. Thank God I was like all professional and stuff with it.
You were. You held it together. Good work. Is that what the scream was for?
You're right. Yeah. Finally got to let it all out. I didn't talk the whole time.
That's right. It felt so good to release all that pent up nervousness, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, she's famous, and she does, like, real things.
She's famous, and her husband's famous.
That's right, yeah. And he's the author of Couch, which is the epic, slacker epic.
The slacker epic.
About three people from Portland carrying a couch.
Carrying a couch all over,
the world.
Mostly the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah. But it's a fantastic book. Yeah. I should make note of that to put a link up on the internet, because it's good. So anyways, I recommend that book highly. And I recommended it to you, actually, and you read it.
Yeah.
Was that before or after our cycle trip to Crater Lake?
It was after. Pretty much immediately after you mentioned it. You told me I should read it.
Okay, yeah. Because you were talking about having an idea to have some sort of post-apocalyptic bicycle touring novel.
Correct.
And I was like, hey, I think I know something like that or similar. One of my favorite parts of that book was actually the account of which they are they're carrying a couch, and the premise of the book is that the couch gets heavier when it's not going the way the couch wants to go.
Right.
But when it's going when they're carrying it in the direction the couch wants to go, it's light.
Carry,
it almost moves itself.
Right.
And so they end up like north of Portland along Highway 30, and they end up getting on one of those electric rail cars, like some guys just pirating the railroad.
Yeah.
And sailing north on an electric rail vehicle. Of his own making, which is pretty awesome.
Right.
I've always wanted to do that. Have you ever seen Like those little personal rail cars that sometimes people ride on rails?
No.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was reading the book, the thing that I envisioned at first until, you know, it was mentioned that it was electrical.
Yeah.
It's like one of those old-timey things where you have like that sort of seesaw action.
The push cart.
Right.
Yeah, totally. Or it's not a push cart. What are they? Hand cart.
Hand cart.
Yeah. Because you got like two guys in overalls, like you know, working their way across the Continental Divide or something.
Right. With their dog out front.
Yeah, because there's gold in them hills or something. I don't know. I actually have no, I've never ever heard like what those would actually be good for. Like the little pump cart. What do I call it?
No idea. Hand cart.
Hand cart. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously it gets you from here to there. Maybe if you were working on the railroad, and you had to carry like a bucket full of spikes
to continue laying
track or something. I don't know.
Or to like reset a rail or post of some kind.
Yeah.
I guess.
Possibly.
This is maybe a glaring revealing of my ignorance. Like I don't know, like, then what would you do if a train comes?
Exactly. Well, seriously, yeah. I mean, because those things are too heavy to just like pick up and pull off the tracks.
Right.
Like you would have to bail and the locomotive would crash through your handcart and then you'd be stuck. And then maybe that's where hobos come from.
Hobos used to be railroad workers.
And then their handcart got smashed by a locomotive.
Very sensitive having the lady running street books.
Was just total faux pas.
As our guest.
Mama used to feed the hobos. Now I'm a hobo myself. All right.
That was a Billy Bob Thornton song.
Billy Bob Thornton, as we know, is a master of music and his craft.
The blues especially.
That's right. He's a blues man.
Yes.
Well, anyways. What were we going to talk about before we got derailed, so to speak?
You really miss Brandon, don't you?
Well, I mean, I just like any chance to make a bad joke. Our 100-mile ride.
100 miles,
talk about that.
Yes. Yeah. You're right. And then I derailed you, and then you derailed.
That's right.
With rail talk.
That's right.
There,
you got railroaded.
I got one in two.
No, but we were riding with our friend David Hetty. He was the one that kind of had the idea at first.
Right.
We're going to go over Lolo Pass, which is here in Oregon, right just east of the entire metro area. You got the Cascade Mountains, and it's a pass going over the mountains to the other side.
Right. It's a 100-mile ride, and what was the... I only know, like, the total elevation, which is not true to the actual elevation. The total elevation is something like approaching
5,000 feet.
No.
Is it really?
Higher. Like, the total elevation that you bike.
Oh, right. So not the actual elevation
right,
of the location.
Versus the actual elevation. The total elevation is something approaching 10,000, because you're going up and down.
So the pass is only about 4,000 feet
but
you climb up and then you go down and you go up again. So you eventually end up climbing about 9,000 feet worth of uphill.
Right. And just as an aside, I think total elevation is just something bicyclists have on there just to make them sound like they're actually working harder than they are. Because the actual elevation that we would have if we had taken this ride was like maybe 5,000, if that.
Yeah, that's for Fred's, I guess, to boast about. But we ended up not doing that ride.
No.
We were going to do it, but apparently there's a fire up there. And it's been raging for a while. And so the road we were going to ride on was closed. So Mr. Hetty came up with the idea of going around Clark County in Washington State, just north of the beautiful gleaming city of north of Vancouver. So we took us.
Be careful with those superlatives.
That's
there.
Right.
They can't see the air quotes.
Yeah, well, we passed the trash filled streets of southern Clark County, and then we got out into nature, and we did 105 miles all the way around, and came back to the light rail station in North Portland,
in the Expo Center there.
Yeah, and that was one hell of a ride.
My knees are still kind of angry at me for that, but I'm glad I did it. I would definitely do one or two more next summer.
Definitely. Yeah. I wouldn't mind doing another. I was telling Adele, actually, my wife at dinner, that I think today it finally hit me, because we went to a concert after the ride. You went home and went to bed, which is probably the better choice. We went to see the last Hill Stomp show ever, at least for a long time, they said, which was fantastic. They are they're masters of their craft, buckets and cans and shit like that, and it's good stuff.
Jacob was my housemate who went with you guys. Right. He was just raving about it all the next day.
Right, who was our former housemate, actually. He used to live in the what is now the podcasting studio where we are now.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, he loved it. And good show. But anyways, we're up late, and I think it was one of those one-day delay sorts of things where, like, yesterday I kind of just played through it, and today I cannot play through it. I just have to kind of take my lumps, I guess, except that I'm getting older and I can't stay up any longer, you know, so, as late as I used to.
So did you bike to work?
I did. Oh, I did, sir. Wow.
You took your lumps.
I did indeed.
And then some.
Yeah, and today was the first, I don't even know if it was a legitimately rainy day. It was raining when I woke up, and I think it just kind of sprinkled by the time I got out there. But it was my first time commuting to work this fall in full rain gear. I think I actually sweat more than I got wet from rain, so I may switch to the wool sweater next time, but we'll see how it works out.
It's always the biker's dilemma in Portland. Either to get rain from, or either to get wet from outside or wet from inside. Either you get rained on or you sweat.
That's right, yeah. I prefer the stuff from outside, actually, because it's cooler when you're in motion.
Right.
But, yeah, it depends. Well, should we talk about some news headlines?
Headlines.
All right, hang on. Let me find the thing. All right, here we go. Oh.
Oh, that, was that the wrong one? Oh.
Yeah.
That sounded more like mailbag.
Oh, here it comes.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
That was local Portland artist Hurt Bird, by the way.
Ah, I'm glad you told me.
Yes, sir.
I was actually kind of grooving on that.
Yeah. So,
anyway, great.
Well, what do we have in headlines, sir?
Shall we talk about Ecovela?
Indeed.
All right. Apparently, bicycling is good for both your body and your anger issues, which I mentioned before we started recording. I might have issues around this article.
Right, right.
But we won't necessarily go into that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if they actually mentioned anger issues specifically. I think it was more just like an overall sort of like you're happier, I think, and people who were participating in a sort of test did better on the test and had more favorable results after bicycling than after commuting, I think, by car.
Right. The experiment was people who biked and people who didn't bike were like shown these quote unquote anger inducing images.
Oh, so like a picture of Glenn Beck.
Yes.
Or a picture of a squirrel.
Yeah.
Fuckers.
Picture of a squirrel chewing through a tent.
Nah, well, okay, that would do it. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that I have nothing against squirrels in general, but squirrels that eat through tents, that's another thing entirely.
Right. But yeah, so the people who biked, I guess, like the EEGs didn't read as strongly as the people who didn't bike, basically. Okay. So what they're saying is you're less apt to become angry quickly. That doesn't mean like things don't still piss you off. It just doesn't piss you off as much.
Oh yeah.
I
get rattled by a good SUV as much as the next guy. So
as well, everyone should be.
Of course. Yeah. Well, anyways, interesting article. So thanks, Logan, for sending that along.
Yeah.
Logan, by the way, just confirmed. I think they're going to come on. He and Tammy are going to come on at some point in the future. And it's not in the next month. It's not on my list for upcoming shows, but they'll be here to talk about life without phones and I think tiny house living. They'll be moved into their tiny house by then. So it'll be exciting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. All right. Ready for the next one?
Sure.
There you go.
Okay. So in the Oregonian, Joseph Rose edits his helmet cam footage to demonstrate the bike lane laws here in the state.
Yeah. Helmet cams are great. Did you see the video?
I didn't.
That's
I didn't,
okay.
But sort of along those lines, well, I was about to sidetrack myself. Sort of along those lines, there's been a lot of heated debate in the Oregonian papers about helmets. And
yeah, there's been a little bit of that.
Helmets?
Yeah.
Should we not wear helmets?
And right.
There's apparently a lot of like dogmatics on either side.
There can be, yeah. One person who's not dogmatic is actually Dave Foyt, who he's coming on the show in about 2 weeks. And he's, I'm sorry, Dave, if you're listening, because he said like he really doesn't ever want to talk about helmets again. He wrote what I think is an amazing article about like, helmet free riding.
Yeah.
But it's just such a contentious issue, and it's become such a, not political, I guess, technically, but like there are politics around the issue so much. And in his support, actually, I think the Oregonian, and Joseph Rose specifically kind of misrepresented his position right as riding without a helmet was kind of...
It was just on the coattails of like two pretty major bicycle deaths.
Right, right. Yeah, it was the wrong time to mischaracterize somebody's opinion and say, well, this guy thought they should die. Then that's just a bad thing. That's bad politics right there. So, anyways, so sorry, Dave, for bringing that up, but that was interesting. The helmet cam thing. Yeah, yeah, basically, what happened here? Mr. Rose had a bunch of great examples of the way that people egregiously misuse bicycle lanes and just road space in general. But it was pretty informative. I thought the video was pretty well put together. So it's worth a viewing or two.
What would you say was one of the like more glaring misuses of the bike lane?
You ever see that thing where a car pulls out like either into a parking space or they're going to try and make like a right turn and they block the bicycle lane?
Like they just stay there.
They just like park like diagonally in the lane.
Oh yeah. I see
that. That's illegal. So anyways, there's some visual representation of that. So there you go.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was loud.
I forgot that there's a little piece of music like between each of these.
That's right. So,
I was about to go like, right, go in. Thank God you cut me off.
Good thing. Well, we have to stay true to form, sir.
Right. So Bike Portland. A Hood River, Oregon company designs a rainfish, quote, rainfish.
It's not an actual rainfish.
Right, you can't see my air quotes. I forget. device to keep bicyclists dry.
Yeah. Did you see the video for this? It was pretty great. They were.
But the idea is really intriguing to me.
Yeah. I wonder if it works. I would really like to road test one. I think that was one of the comments on the video. It was the link from Bike Portland was right to a YouTube video, and I couldn't find a website for Rainfish or whoever makes it. I couldn't find any other information about that yet.
It's basically just a prototype.
I think so. Yeah, it'll be forthcoming, I'm sure. But it's basically like a hood sort of device that you attach to your bicycle, front and back, and basically it'll protect you from kind of the oncoming and top pouring rain. Doesn't do anything for stuff that's blowing in from the side, I guess, if you're in a really severe storm or water that's kicked up from the ground. That's what fenders are for. But,
right, so you still wear some rain gear.
Sure, yeah. But I would imagine you might be able to get away with just wearing wool with that contraption on top. And I think I need to look around for it, but it reminds me of something I saw probably on Bike Portland a couple of years ago, where a guy here in town had made kind of a cab over his bicycle using PVC pipe and like a shower curtain that he got from like Fred Meyer or Target or something like that. He just like stretched it taut so it turned into a windshield and put it over his bike, and it was mounted that way to keep him dry.
Now, my concern with that is like, so you have to wipe. I mean, cars have windshield wipers.
Right.
Like rain collects. Eventually, it's going to get to a point where you can't see.
Yeah, I wonder if that Rain-X stuff would do any sort of...
Oh yeah, maybe.
I assume if it's a vinyl shower curtain that like it's made of Rain-X already. Like, isn't that kind of?
It's basically what Rain-X is. Yeah.
Yeah, and that stuff's probably not so great for the earth, anyways. Gaia is angry, but yeah. Well.
Anyway.
Yep. There it goes. I'm looking forward to getting the sound thing put back together. Okay, continue, sir.
Portland Eyes. Dave pronounces last name.
Foyt.
Foyt.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I had to write to him to find out how. So yeah, he actually congratulated me. I think last time we had a show, I think he heard the show and said, "Hey, you pronounced it well." So
Awesome.
Good times.
Sorry, Dave, but at least I asked before slaughtering.
I mean, it's not spelled like Foyt. It's spelled like Fuch.
Yeah, right.
But that's not correct.
Anyways, Dave Foyt.
That's right.
Writes about a vacation to the beach by bus and proves it can be fun.
Yeah. It was a great little travelogue. I always feel like the big downside of bicycle touring journals is that oftentimes it's just like a travelogue. It's like, oh, we went here, we did this, we saw that.
Right.
I remember there was a published book that I read at one point. I didn't read it. I didn't finish it, but basically it was it was just like, hey, we did these things, and there's like no like good writing anywhere. It's just like basically, you know, time point one, time point two, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and they all kind of, they'll all eventually sound the same. We started at this coffee house. We went to they all have to start at a coffee house.
Wearing our Rafa gear.
You know, we went to this place. It was out in the middle of nowhere.
And here's our crazy friend with a beard.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly.
But this is not one of those. This is actually, you know, it's a story about travel that that went well and was fun. And I think they went to Seaside, Oregon, and stayed in a hotel and did some sightseeing, hanging out, going to and fro. And I think they took their bikes on the bus, which, if I'm not mistaken, they didn't take the Tillamook bus because there's one that runs from Portland to Tillamook. That's like a public transit service, and it's cheap, but it doesn't go to Seaside. I think they took, it might be Amtrak's Thruway Carrier, which I think here in Oregon is OC&W. I'm pretty sure that's the company, or possibly Point Northwest. I've ridden both, and they're both nice. But anyways, they went out there and had a lovely weekend and then came back, and they did it all without a car. Because I think anytime you're talking to somebody and saying, hey, let's go out to the coast, the options are limited. And because of that limitation, most people don't know that any option besides a car exists. So it's nice to know that it can be done, and it can be done well, and it's not a pain. So yeah, it was a good article. I recommend it.
Good, yeah. And it just shows, like you were saying, like you can use bus, you can use public transit to get to different places. It was one of
you can has transport.
It was one of the conversations I had with a coworker of mine that had just moved to Portland, and she was like, "So you only ride a bike?" "Yes." "So what if you want to get out of town?" And well, I don't really get out of town. Is the sad fact.
That's right.
That totally did not fit, but I'm glad you found that. But you know, I tried to tell her it is possible to, you know, get out of town using either mass transit or using, you know, even the Amtrak.
Right.
Unfortunately, I'm not as smart as like you or Dave.
Oh, well,
or maybe
few are, sir. You are.
Or maybe experienced, but
I kid.
But I do know it's possible. So yeah, it's good that people are writing about that so that more people also know that it's possible and that there's resources for these things.
That's right. Tell your friends.
Yes.
No. Yeah, sound.
So it's not going in stereo for you either?
No, okay, no, that's so the big problem. My iPod is broken.
It's the iPod.
Badly.
I thought it was the headphones.
No, no.
All right. B Portland. Mobile Music Festival happens on Portland Streetcar.
And I really, really wish that I could have seen this. I wish I'd known it was happening earlier.
Yeah.
I just didn't have my ear to the ground, I guess. It was something, I think I learned about it initially on Twitter, and Be Portland is the website that had the best explanation of what it was and how it worked. But yeah, it sounded awesome. There was, what's it, Music Fest Northwest is the big
MFNW. Yeah, the huge thing that's going on, yeah. Or does go on. It's all over now.
But, yeah. But bands everywhere. It's
basically like our version of South by Southwest.
Right. Yeah. Except
only better.
And less famous. But it's they had a certain participants. I think there was a list of maybe 8 bands that all at different times hopped onto the Portland Streetcar and played acoustic sets. There was actually a guy sitting on one of the seats. somewhere, you know, probably on the lower floor with a drum set set up. And instead of a drum throne, he was just sitting on the Portland streetcar seat with the drum set in front of him. But yeah, it was a full lineup, and it was something that people just kind of either they knew it was happening and they were there for it, or they didn't know and they were just going to take the streetcar for everyday use. And then all of a sudden they're like, hey, music. So yeah, it sounded awesome. So there's a great write-up of that.
How awesome would it be to be on your way home from work and, you know, one of your favorite bands, like, say, Blind Pilot, and maybe that's blatant.
Right. Or Jared Mees and the Grown Children.
Oh, yeah. Why didn't I say that?
Not, you didn't know.
but yeah, say them. You know, you get on the streetcar on your way home from work, and there they are, like, playing. You know, how awesome would that be?
Right, right. I think one of the things that the B Portland article actually pointed out was that it was almost like a point of sociality for some people. Like, ordinarily, you wouldn't be talking to other folks on the streetcar.
Right.
Like, most times you don't talk to folks on public transit unless something awesome happens. But
or something terrible.
Yeah, yeah. But something awesome was happening. Or, depending on the act, maybe something terrible. I don't know. But yeah.
Yeah, I imagine, like, everybody who's on that streetcar, and maybe not everybody, most of the people who's on that streetcar are on that streetcar to see said band. You know?
Right, right.
You know, so you know, like, the guy or girl standing next to you is a fan. You know?
Right, and so you can talk about their discography, their history.
Right, yeah, you've got that point of connection.
Yeah.
Like, whereas, and that's sort of a major issue for me on mass transit or on the buses and whatever. I have no real natural point of connection.
Yeah, for
with
sure.
Anybody. So I'm not one to just, like, you know, just go out and say, like, hey, book. Awesome.
I notice you are reading something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's start up conversation.
That's right. Well, Portland Afoot, it's the local, low car life magazine. They do awesome work, but they actually had a thing, at least on one of their earlier episode, or not episode, they call them issues when they're in print, but they usually were, yeah, weird, right? But they had something like, it was almost, I can't remember if they called it Max Train Bingo or something like that, where basically you would get a certain number of points for doing a certain socially engaging action on public transit. So you got, like, you know, 10 points for giving somebody directions, or 50 points for deciding to unplug your iPod and go without, you know, 100 points for, I don't know, asking somebody out. I dare you, man.
Yeah, exactly.
No, totally. She digs you.
Really?
But yeah, it was kind of cool. Just the idea of trying to reclaim public space and trying to have a little more faith and trust in humanity than people usually do.
Well,
so
it's what we're meant to do. I mean, mm-hmm. It seems very difficult, and I will be the first to confess my own issues with socializing.
Oh, me too. But seriously.
Yeah, it's what we're meant to do as humans. We are to talk to each other.
Right.
We are to connect and you know, make connections with other people, you know, albeit even if they are just for the brief time that you're on the bus. It's something within us, I think, that we desire. We're kind of hardwired that way. It's something about being together, like, in this sort of forced container going from point A to point B,
that's right,
we begin to clam up, and, like, mm-hmm. you know, now it becomes socially awkward.
Right, right. It wasn't when you got on the bus, but when you got off the bus, definitely.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, hey, that was good. Good set of news. We'll close that out with this.
You're taking a lot of responsibility in owning and riding a bicycle. You are now an operator of a wheeled vehicle.
All right. Well, hey, that's all we had. And then we have this pre-taped interview with Laura Moulton of Street Books, which is a fantastic service.
So can we retroactively introduce Laura Moulton?
I mean, yeah. Folks, this, in just a moment, will be. Is that what you meant?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we already did the fanfare thing, I guess.
That's true, yeah. Well, it's all coming. So, you know, maybe the thing. Well, I tell you what, we'll do this after the interview. So, in just a couple minutes, Laura Moulton. All right. So now, let's see. I guess I should play the fanfare first, and then we'll announce you after.
Okay.
All right, and we present to you Laura Moulton of Street Books and Other Famous Projects. This is Brock Dittus with the Sprocket Podcast. That's Aaron Flores over there.
Howdy.
And yeah, we have the pleasure of having Laura with us tonight in the studio. So thank you for joining us, and it's good to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about, as we finally get into our flawless production, tell me a little bit about the Street Books project and maybe how it started.
Well, first I want to thank you for the fanfare, because that's the best fanfare I've had in like a week.
We aim to please. That's what we do.
It was pretty awesome. And I think in terms of what inspired me to found Street Books, I think I love bicycles. I love books. And I had some past history working with people living outside. And so I wrote a grant to Regional Arts and Culture Council to pull together a library that would be oriented to people living outside and would be delivered on bicycle. And it was funded. And so then I actually had to do it, which is the great thing about writing a grant. It's this built-in obligation and wonderful. I mean, it's great. And it's also an accountability that I took seriously. And so I launched the library the first week of June and operated it this summer. I've been taking 2 weeks off in September to get organized, but we're launching again the first week of October. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Just in time for some lovely weather and, you know,
yeah.
It'll be perfect for paperback books.
That's right. As soon as the rain starts coming down, you can.
Yeah.
Do you plan to give books away with Ziploc bags or plastic bags or anything like that?
That
or?
Is a great idea. And actually, now that you mention it, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, there we go. I guess that was the genesis of an idea right there.
Yeah.
I was excited.
Yeah, no, you know, we actually, I have a fellow street librarian, Sue Zalikar, and she and I have been kind of combing the downtown area for natural occurring sort of urban shelters.
There you go.
So right now we operated a great shift in the park blocks at Salmon Street. So right as far north as you can get before the park blocks sort of end near the university and the art museum there.
Okay.
And it was a great, lively library shift because there were so many people coming and going and we had our regulars there. But in the rain, that will be, you know, sort of a bummer. And so we're sort of eyeing, like there's a wonderful little overhang at the Arlene Schnitzer there.
Oh, right. The concert
faces
hall.
And it faces exactly where we were all summer, but it does provide a little shelter. And so I'm sort of in talks with them. I'm approaching them and they haven't gotten back to me yet about, you know, using that overhang just as a shelter in case of rain. So
that'd be nice.
Yeah.
I was thinking of, there's another park on the park blocks. You remember, Aaron, we went there for the, Star Trek versus Star Wars ride for Petalpalooza.
Yamhill.
Yeah. And I can't remember the name of the, it's like, it's next to the Fox Tower Theater.
It's probably, it starts with a, it's Director's Park.
Director's Park. Right. Yeah. Oh, right. Cause of like movies. I don't know if it's actually because of movies, but that's a good spot because they have a huge kind of pavilion that's undercover there.
Yes,
right?
And I checked that out, and it's interesting. I'm not sure that's the best spot for my patrons, but it's cool. It's a potential for sure. I mean, one thing we're thinking about too is where to best serve people. And I had two locations in the summer. One was the Park Blocks, and one was Skidmore Fountain.
Oh, right.
And Skidmore Fountain was great because there was so much traffic coming through, and and people actually write down with their shopping carts and sleeping out there. And so, you know, it was handy. They were already there and they could come to the library shift, you know?
Yeah.
And I had definite regulars at the Skidmore Fountain shift and at the Park Block shift. And so, we are currently in the next week or so, we'll make final decisions about where we'll lend library books from through the fall and winter. So,
okay. So this is a service that's focused in downtown Portland then.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much your area. You don't travel around town to the outlying areas or anything like that.
No, I did experimentally bike the library full with books from Skidmore Fountain up to my house in the Culley neighborhood.
Okay.
52nd and Going Street area. And
that's a good long ride.
Yeah. And I've only done it once there and back which was great. I just wanted to see. It was a kind of a Jim Jones style workout, kind of ridiculous, like pushing this box of books up hills. But going down was, you know, downtown was easier. It's been really nice that I didn't have to make that kind of trek. This summer, Mercy Corps, the action center that's right at Skidmore Fountain, hosted our library. So that was great because what it meant was they have the action center there that features a bunch of different countries and describes their global assistance and projects. And we had a little spot there. So I had the bike actually set up, you know, after each shift. And so it was kind of on exhibit when it wasn't being used as a library, which was great.
Nice.
So
yeah. You get some press, some PR.
Yeah.
So let's see. I was just thinking, as far you've mentioned shifts and like taking a place, establishing yourself there, and then lending books from that location. How often do you do this? Is it a once a week sort of thing, or are you out there every
it's
day?
It's twice a week. Twice a week. Yeah. And through the summer, it was we did Wednesdays and Saturdays.
Okay.
Through the fall winter, we're planning on a Monday Wednesday shift. So,
nice.
And then summer we'll hit it again in the weekend as well.
Okay.
So we really thought about our main patrons and what their schedules were like, and many of them have pretty open schedules. So we decided, as long as we had a steady twice a week, same day each time, you know, each day. I mean, like a Monday might not be that different than a Saturday, sort of thing.
Sure. So. Yeah. And it seems like the folks that you're offering your services to, or you're targeting your services to, it seems like it's kind of a thing where if you have consistency and you're there, like every week at a certain time, they might build their schedules around that to be there for it.
Yeah, definitely. That was something very cool. You know, it's when I started talking about this project, people were quick to say, not everyone, but there were definitely some naysayers that said, man, you're never going to see the books again. You know, good luck.
Those damn homeless.
You might as well. Yeah. Those dirty old guys sitting out there. And,
right.
And actually, you know, I knew that these people who were already outside would have far more pressing concerns than getting their paperback book back on time to some nutty lady that had set up in the square, you know? So I sort of approached it as though I wouldn't see the books again.
There you go.
In the beginning. And then it was really like a, you know, ring a bell experience every time someone came back. And then it happened and happened again. And I had great regulars, like a handful of guys who sort of came to both shifts. So I'd see them at Skidmore Fountain on Wednesday, and then they'd be up at the park blocks on Saturday, returning the books they had just gotten on Wednesday and checking out more, you know. And I had some guys that were kind of like, come on, when are you going to turn over this selection? Like, right. Come on, I've read everything, you know. So,
right. And I guess I was just thinking about, like, if you're trying to take paperback books and sell them, like if you've tried to do that at Powell's or any other place that buys books, they're just not worth very much and not really worth your time. Like, I mean, they're definitely worth your time to read, but if you're planning to make a buck off of stolen paperback, it just seems like that's maybe one of the least appealing ways to make your money.
Yeah. Well, and I just, you know, we have a prominently, well, it's not huge, but we have a street book sticker on the cover.
Sure.
And, I didn't get the sense that anybody I served, was headed to try to sell it. I definitely was offered various things, you know, for sale, like headphones and, you know, various things over time.
Yeah.
That I didn't take, just for the record, street books, didn't purchase any probably nefariously collected items from the street.
Sure.
But you know, I had a kid named Dustin who came to me and said, oh, Laura, I have terrible news. And I sort of geared myself up for whatever it was. And he said, I totally ruined the copy of Hellboy, the graphic novel that you lent me. And so it was so cool. I just said, oh man, you know, I mean, he was sleeping out and it had gotten wet. And he said, the pages are stuck together. And I just said, you can't understand what a success story that is, you coming to tell me that so many people said, you know, these guys were not going to return the books. And not only did they return them, when they couldn't, they came and said, you know, here's why I can't give you the book back.
Well, it's better than the public library. Like I've had things out from the public library for years, and like, I'm never going to go back and say, hey, here it is, because they're going to be like, well, you owe us $2,000.
I know. Exactly.
So
sorry.
Yeah. You have a system based on forgiveness and grace and understanding and all that.
Yeah. Well, and it was also small enough in a way that the people who came the first week, came back the next week and formed this community that where everyone, it was first name basis. Everyone saw, I mean, you know, they got a warm greeting each week and a question about, hey, did you find your wallet? You know, that kind of thing that maybe a bigger library system is not able to do.
Sure.
Naturally, just because they serve so many more people, you know?
Right.
So it was really a cool, you know, kind of close community this summer.
Yeah, like
really
a literary nice. Water cooler.
Yeah, exactly. And the really interesting thing was that so often we would stand around talking and these people who had read about us in the Oregonian or heard about us, you know, on OPB came to give books or to donate money or to just say good job, because we really did get a lot of support from Portlanders. It was very cool. And then combine those people with our patrons and everyone standing around talking about books. And it, after a while, it becomes unclear who is there for what and who is actually technically living outside, who's mm-hmm. living inside, you know. So it was a pretty cool, many times I looked around and thought, whoa, look at the dynamic that's happening here. It's really cool, you know.
Yeah, kind of a blurring of the boundaries between social status and
yeah.
who's more important than who else and all
yeah.
that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I was kind of curious, just it seems as though obviously you read and you write and words are important to you, but the way that you refer to your patrons, using the word patron for one is seems like a great way to give someone some dignity and maybe a I don't know if it's a more arbitrary label, but just like a word that's not loaded with a bunch of other meanings. Maybe tell us about how you process that in your mind.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because I wanted to offer offer them a library card and excuse me, give them a service that did not require them to give me proof of address or ID. And so I made a cool little business card that says Street Books on one side. It's sort of a photo from the actual text that's alongside the box. And I should say the box is connected to a Haley trike. The bike that I got, I bought used okay. off of Craigslist. And it's HaleyTrikes.com is the website. They are actually out of Philadelphia, and they make some very cool custom sort of trike bicycles. But in this case, it was a very simple box with a tricycle behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother, who's kind of an architect, design builder guy, helped me sort of take it down to the studs and then build it. And when I say helped me, he built it. I scratched it out on a napkin. Okay. And
sure.
But he did.
You had the high concept.
Exactly. But we were kind of going for sort of a Depression era trunk look and kind of a curiosity, I hoped, in mm-hmm. itself. And it really is beautiful, I think. So anyway, we built that up, and now I forget where we were going with that.
Do you remember, Aaron?
Patrons.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes.
Right,
and so
right.
thank you. Yes. Back to the.
That's why there's a co-host.
I know. Aaron brings us back to it all. So yeah,
earned my wages.
Exactly.
Right.
Now you can drink your ginger beer. That's how I got distracted. The card itself has a photo of the text on
okay.
the bike. And so that's on one side, and on the back, it says, there's basically a line that says patron. And so upon meeting a prospective patron who comes and hangs over the cart and looks at the books, I would offer them this card and I would handwrite their name in and then shake their hand. And that's how it was official. And
yeah.
So they were kind of members. And it's interesting. I recently got, I've, in this process, I've been sort of thrust into a more public sort of eye than I would have anticipated. In many ways, great. I mean, we got great media coverage. And so that's been very exciting. But I've also gotten some kind of nutty sort of hate mail. And
really,
yeah. And this guy, most recently this guy wrote, and in all caps, wrote me an email at the librarian email
ones.
Address. I know. I knew when I saw it, okay, this is going to be good. But he was, apparently an aspiring author, and I had a conversation with him, and he said,
sorry, you all can, caps.
I know. Exactly. You can go here and download my book. And, you know, read it. And I said, great, that's cool. And I probably talked to like 30 people that day. And so, you know, I never made it to download his book and read it. And
oh,
so
okay.
this email was so, it was kind of like, you've gotten good press and lots of people are helping you, but have you helped me? And it was kind of like, you know, fuck you. So he was going to go and he said he was going to tear up his Street Books cart.
Oh my.
And sort of renounce his membership. And so anyway, I just think it's interesting. I guess I cite that because the card and the whole like handshake has taken on sort of more of a, maybe a bigger life than I would have imagined, you know?
Sure.
And he doesn't have to tear up his card. He doesn't have to be a member, you know, but, but for these guys, it was really cool. They kept their cards, you know, I mean, it wasn't, yeah. They didn't have to show me each week, and soon enough I knew their names just fine anyway. And so it was really cool, but they would choose their books. They would sign a card inside. It's a very old school library pocket with a card. Right.
I
would keep that. I know. Aren't they great?
Yeah.
It was so exciting to find them on the internet and order a box and
no kidding.
Put them in front of these or in the front of the books. Yeah.
Can you still get those on the internet?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You can get everything on the internet.
I guess you can. I mean, yeah, that's a silly question, but no, like there was the way that the Multnomah County Library has things now is like
barcode scanner.
Well, and with the DVDs that I've been getting from the library, like you just set them on the thing and the machine says, it's a DVD.
Yeah.
Like there's no scanning of barcode. It's all like
books.
Like, yeah.
It's amazing. You can see, I don't know if you guys have played with it, but just to see how many you can stack on there and have it read at the same time.
I had eight.
Really?
I had eight.
Is that right?
I've not, yes. Eight is a record. I've done more than eight.
They were all comic books, but I had eight.
Oh, the truth comes out. Okay.
But you don't have any sort of RFID in your books. It's all old school card catalog stuff. So that, it's almost like a contract you sign when you check the book out, I guess, or something like that.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think so.
Do you actually have like a drawer that you keep things in on the bike? Is there a...
So that's the other
filing
thing.
Filing system?
James, my brother, built... There is a rolling drawer that actually rolls out with paperbacks, like two deep. And so that goes out and we have a little kickstand that goes underneath that. And then inside the side of the box, I have a little set of pockets, kind of mesh pockets that I bought at IKEA that you're supposed to nail to the wall and you can keep arts and crafts supplies, but I sort of cut it down to fit and then just, you know, we nailed it inside there. We screwed it inside there. And so it has little pockets. So I feel somewhat organized. It's not, you know, I'm not a real librarian. I'm a street librarian. And so I can alphabetize, I can, you know, make book recommendations, but I'm not, you know.
Well, you didn't study library science perhaps.
No,
but,
exactly.
But you do like books.
I do.
Yeah. I was just thinking, how do you choose the books? You mentioned a little bit of like people requesting, I think, and that sort of thing. But where do you find the books and where do you find the ideas for like what you should have and who wants what?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I raided my own shelves to start the project. I went, in fact, my husband too, Ben, was saying, you know, come on, I think that's a copy of, you know, Thane's book. It's on loan to me, you know, that kind of thing.
Ah.
So, but I did, I used my own books and then I actually, connected with a woman, Rachel, who runs Second Glance Books in Portland on Sandy Boulevard and 45th, if anyone wants to go by Second Glance Books. It's a very cool old school, bookstore and they have great Louis L'Amours for $2.75 and really nice, a really nice selection, but when she heard about the project, she immediately started donating boxes of books to me and finding specific titles and hanging on to them for me. And now she gives me sort of a 50% off everything for street books sort of thing, which is amazing. If a Louis L'Amour starts at $2.75, half off, and she practically owes me money, you know? So anyway, though, to answer your question, I think outdoor survival type books, adventure books, Louis L'Amour westerns are really popular with some of my older guys, actually with a lot of the younger ones traveling through, and then some of my regular sort of grew up on a ranch in Wyoming sort of older guys.
Yeah.
I realized that I had a certain bias. I didn't want to, inflict like Jane Austen on a guy who didn't really want to improve himself. He wanted to read to escape his, you know, current predicament. And, so at the same time, though, I definitely had some people that were really interested in highbrow stuff and obscure stuff. And so I basically, after a few weeks, began to take requests. And I would have young kids traveling through with their backpacks on their way to the Rainbow Gathering in Washington State.
Oh, yeah.
And ask them, hey, what do you think should be here? And I got great lists of recommendations from them, you know? And over time it was both request based, and also I had great librarian friends from everywhere sending me like, you've got to have these titles sort of thing, you know,
nice.
Sending me books. So yeah.
I guess at some point you're going to run out of room in the trike, and then you'll need two trikes or
oh man, I don't know. You know, that's the thing. It carries right now about 40, between 40 and 50 titles at a time.
Okay.
And which was fine all summer. We never emptied the cart, for instance. We just didn't have that level of people around. But we definitely moved a lot of books this summer. And I think that right now they're in my basement, these books, like boxes and boxes of books. And we got great donations from all different sides in Portland. But I'm looking for like a centrally located downtown spot. Church basement or like an extra office room
just for storage,
just for book storage, so that it's a place besides my house that people can come and bring books.
Right.
And for a while, really, I was just out of desperation giving people our address, and Ben would step out on the couch or on the porch like on a Sunday morning, and there'd be like five brown paper bags full of paperbacks, and he'd say, okay, Laura, you know, like, so yeah.
Cats bringing you mice, that sort of thing.
Pretty much. And I was happy to see them, but at the same time, it was like beginning to become a problem as to where I was going to store
like
these.
One dead mouse is okay. Many dead mice, not okay.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
As far as just like, do you partner with any other organizations? Like, there's all kinds of like rescue missions and places for people to get food. What's it called? Sisters of the Road is down there, the cafe. Street Roots, the publication, they got guys out selling those everywhere. Do you have any sort of formal or informal connection with anybody else that works with people outside?
Yeah, like Street Roots is a good example.
You just had a piece in there, didn't
you? Yes, okay. And that's what I've written for them over time.
The internet.
Yeah, see? Isn't that? You're so well-researched.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you did it all from this room, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. Well, actually, I did it like an hour ago, just to make sure I was current. Right. So.
Okay, tell me the truth. Anyway, so they, Israel Bayer, the executive director, has been terrific. He's really sort of partnered with us and talked us through, you know, street books being sort of an art project in the summer that we didn't want to end when the grant did. And so we are right now exploring nonprofit status and looking at what we need to do for that sort of thing. We're very fresh, you know, very green, but I've had some really good people come forward and be willing to help with, you know, doing the bicycle shifts. Sue Zalikar is a woman that I met quite by chance outside of Street Roots newspaper office. And she began to do shifts for me this summer. One thing I didn't really think through was that I had basically obligated myself to be in downtown Portland Wednesday and Saturday through the whole summer.
Right, right.
And that ruled out like a canoe trip with my family and things like that. And so Sue was excellent for stepping up and just taking over the shift and making good connections with the patrons herself and blogging about it. And that was a very cool thing. So anyway, though, she's been a great helper. Street Roots, the newspaper, I think will be a great partner as we go forward. We've definitely been talking to them. And a lot of their vendors I connected with through Street Books. In fact, a very cool thing was that one of their regular vendors was also a regular of ours, and he was a bit of a protector of us. You know, he definitely, you know, would scope the scene and make sure that, you know, the library was safe. And he actually helped me with the last shift of the summer. I did half of it, and then my boy had a soccer game, so I wanted to take off. And so Dante finished the shift and took the bike back and put it all back. And so that was such a cool thing. He was psyched to be able to have that conversation with people and participate. Yeah. I was psyched to pay him. I paid him from my grant to operate it. And so it was very cool. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about the grant, but are there other funding sources or do you take donations?
Yes. I'm so glad you asked. Okay. We do take donations. In fact, we have this Kickstarter campaign that's running right now.
Okay.
And it's basically to earn money for fall and winter operations. And that means helping Sue and I work the shifts, outfit the bike a little bit more rainproof, bike maintenance and that kind of thing. And we also have on streetbooks.org, our website, we have a donate button so people can go there if they want to sponsor a paperback. That's like a $10, $12, you know, generally will more than cover the paperback.
There you go.
So that's definitely, and I even have a P.O. box on there for people. So streetbooks.org is the place to find out more information.
Excellent. Streetbooks.org. we should probably wrap this up and let you move on to the rest of your exciting life, because you've got a lot of things going. But maybe you just want to plug everything else that you do, other projects that you work on, internet presences, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, you know, you guys mentioned Ben Parzybach. He's my husband.
Yes, we did before we started taping. Right. Aaron and I are both huge fans of his novel Couch, which it's been called, I'm not sure if this is accurate or not, but it's been labeled, I think, in the press as a slacker epic.
Yeah.
Something like that, which is broadly appealing, I think, to you and I, Aaron. I think we both are slackers and we both like epic things.
Yeah,
so.
I'm not sure which I like really more, the slacker or the epic.
Right.
So, yeah, anyways.
Yeah. Well, so he and I are sort of co-conspirators on a lot of things, but right now we're both working on novels, and he has finished a second one that you guys might be really interested in. It's its own kind of epic. I can't talk about it too much because it's fresh, but
sure.
But I am also a novelist, and so I'm working on trying to finish a final draft of a book that I've been working on for several years. And the Street Books project was so exciting, but it also completely sideswiped me. I thought for some reason naively that I would just ride my bike downtown and operate a library, you know, twice a week, and my work would end at the end of the shift.
Sure.
But just the one thing that is a cool part of that project, I think, is that it has a on the website, people can see a photo of the patron with the book of their choice. And all summer long, I invited them to pose with their book.
Nice.
And that was part of the project. That was the idea, was not to expose them. It was to show what they were interested in. And they're well traveled, and they're sometimes really weary and beat down. Sometimes they are fresh, you know, on the road. Some of the young people that came through with their backpacks, like headed to the Rainbow Gathering, as I mentioned,
right,
had pretty good gear. They seemed maybe slightly recreationally homeless, you know, mm-hmm. and maybe in bad weather, they would go back home and get ready for college or whatever. I mean, there was definitely a full range, people who had been out for quite a while, people who were really exploring the road, you know, but all of them agreed to pose with their books. And that creates quite an interesting portrait, I think, of a summer full of people who lived, you know, outside.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's almost a humanizing sort of thing. Like,
yeah,
you're just putting their face with something besides, maybe besides poverty or besides, what's typically associated with, people who are in transition or.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. I think this summer I learned so much about what I imagined was like the full story of a thing. Like, mm-hmm. like for instance, that Ben, one of our regular patrons, could be, could quote from Goethe and could be this incredibly bright person and also have to eat out of a dumpster, you know?
Right.
That was a weird contradiction for me to get my head around. And I think that a lot of people felt that way. It was kind of like, wow, I never thought about these guys reading, you know, but of course they read. And, you know, so I just think it's a pretty interesting thing. There was a girl that I worked with week to week at the beginning of the summer who, you know, checked out books. And then one day I ran into her downtown and she'd been looking for me, and it just was very cool. We met on the Max one day and she was there with her dog. And so there was this, I mean, that was the heartwarming part of it, like this connection we formed. But one day after I'd given a book to her, you know, I noticed her then kind of underneath the bridge at Skidmore Fountain in a serious nod, like she'd just mm-hmm. taken something that had made her just almost incapacitated. So it was just kind of interesting because it was sort of like the full, you know, the full spectrum. And it was not always going to be this sort of heartwarming, you know, I just gave her a paperback and now her life has changed.
Right. Right.
Of course it wasn't that. And so mm-hmm. I had to sort of learn that, like, these people had many, many things going on, and, you know, my showing up with a paperback was one very small piece of their lives, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, we know some guys that live, out behind the 205, the interstate over here, which is like 10 blocks away or less. And just yesterday a guy showed up, and he comes by every now and again to get water or use the phone or something like that. And was telling me the idea of getting evicted, I guess, like, you know, Portland police has been doing some pretty aggressive it's not even evictions. It's like just coming in, you know,
they just sweep them out,
breaking up camps. Yeah. Sweeping black belongings into trash bags and that sort of thing. And yeah, it is kind of, it's tricky to see like all the sides. Cause like, it's cool to see, you know, like somebody's day was made better by something small you were able to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you get into it, yeah, you also have to see some of the harder stuff to take as well. So yeah, that's a tough thing.
Yeah.
But But ultimately, it's good stuff. And yeah, we're glad that you're doing what you do.
Yeah, well, so, thanks so much for having me on.
It's much appreciated. Yeah, it's streetbooks.org is streetbooks on the internet. And lauramoulton.org, M-O-U-L-T-O-N. And that just about does it, I think, for us. So thanks again for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right.
Cheers.
Back with the Sprocket Podcast. I'm Brock. That's Aaron. Yeah. Well, it was great to have Laura in the studio. It was nice for her to drop in and great stuff to hear. Great engaging stories and whatnot. So, hey, we've got some stuff for from the mailbag, which my sounder, it's loading from the internet. Come on, machine. I may trim some of this down. Maybe.
Do I have to start?
You've got some mail.
That's right.
You've got
Oh, there it is. All right. It's ridiculous. It's so not worth it for all the weight. All right. So first up, we've got Adele, my wife, actually just called in. And she left us a story about something that happened to her on the bus. So we should play that. It was quite entertaining, actually.
I haven't heard this yet.
So. Yeah.
Hi, Brock and Brandon. This is Adele from your house calling in with a little bus story that I wanted to share in the spirit of the episode from a few weeks ago. I love the bus. Last week I was getting on the number 19 at like 6:45 in the morning, which I hardly ever do. I usually ride to work, but I had to take the bus. And the route driver, it was apparently her last day on the route, and she had baked all these bags of goodies to give to every passenger who was riding her route that morning. And so I happened to be on it at just the right time. And like she baked brownies and Rice Krispie treats and cookies. And as every person gets the bus, they could grab one of these to go. And as we were going over the Ross Island Bridge, we also held a raffle for all the ladies to win some homey jewelry she makes in her free time. So, yeah, TriMet is pretty cool. Maybe it's not the best bus line in this country, but this might kind of prove that it's awesome. Happy bus adventures to listeners out there, and that's all I've got. Bye.
That's pretty awesome. I wish I was on that bus, just if only to get the cookies, you know?
This confirms my suspicions that the number 19 bus, or that line anyways, is a magical line.
It is. Yeah, I mean, it goes right past our house, so.
Well, yeah, that helps, but it goes everywhere.
It's true, yeah.
It's got a really, really wide route, like as far as going from one end of the city to the other.
That's right. It makes a big kind of a horseshoe, actually, around the east side city. So, yeah, I recommend it. If you visit Portland, ride the line 19. I can't guarantee you get handmade jewelry, but yeah.
And that also like confirms that Portland bus drivers are just the coolest.
Some of them are.
I've not had a bad experience.
Well, that's good, actually. That's good. I've had far fewer bad ones in recent years. I think they probably had a customer service push in the past decade or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It used to be you get on the bus and you'd be lucky if you got, you know, something like verbal.
Right.
But yeah.
See, that's my experience in Pittsburgh.
Oh, sure.
You know. Yeah. That's the East Coast too, but
yeah. And in New York City, aren't they behind glass? They're just like in this little bulletproof container.
They probably have to be in New York, but yeah, over here they've always been generally helpful, not always like overtly friendly. But anyways, yeah, I hope like behavior, if that's probably not the best word, but as far as like making jewelry for people on your last day or like giving them treats on your last day, I hope that's encouraged, you know, by TriMet. If they like anyone in the upper echelons of TriMet will listen to this, maybe.
That's
but
right.
I hope they, if they do hear about this, that that's encouraged and say like, yeah, those are the connections you should be making with the people who ride.
Most definitely.
To like Nope. Should be all business. Don't make eye contact. Yeah. Only give instructions if they're asked.
That's right. Listener Gus. Gus actually is the guy that gave me the travel story about the guy from Evergreen College who rode buses from Olympia to LA, I think. It was fantastic. Anyways, we met him, Brandon and I, on our bike trip earlier this year, and he sent us an interesting blog post about a homebrew club in California. The catch with homebrew, of course, is that, you know, you're not allowed to sell it. So if you're trying to you know,
you almost inevitably
recoup your costs, at least, yeah. There's no good legal way to do that, except for there's this thing in California where apparently folks will kind of collectively brew some stuff, or like they'll bring in their own batches of home brew. They'll give it away for free. You know, nobody's buying or selling anything. It's totally legal. And then they have a tip jar or something like that. Like, hey, you like what you just had? If you want to help me in the process, give me a donation.
Right.
That sort of thing. So the blog post was the good and the bad about that sort of arrangement. And apparently Gus disagrees with point number five, which was that your friends may not actually tell you what they really think about your beer, which I don't know. Feelings play into it. You know, people's feelings get hurt, that sort of thing. So
Yeah. All my friends who had microbrews, I pretty much told them what I thought about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, their beer.
Well, that's because you don't drink.
Right.
It can go to hell. It can eat sand.
Your beer can suck it.
That's right. Blaine in BC got an email from him, a Facebook message, I guess. But he said that he successfully completed his Yukon tour. He's through the Yukon and Alaska, and made it back and has some stories to tell. So at some point he's going to come and join us. We'll probably Skype him in at some point.
Yeah.
Also, he's looking at starting a food podcast. So he's been bitten by the podcasting bug. Apparently, it's exciting. I would say start soon, start early, and figure it out as you go along. That's what we did. Also, he liked the Crater Lake tour stories and couldn't imagine bicycling like that with the flu.
No, me neither.
Neither could I, actually. Yeah, I did not bicycle with the flu. My friends did, but not I.
I'm
no,
glad,
sir.
I got it when I did.
Yeah. Which was on the train.
Right. I mean, yeah, of all the times to get it.
Yeah. And then let's see here. We got some iTunes reviews. Carl from Animalheim, as he says, and someone only known as, quote, freedivers_33, unquote. Carl says, best day ever. The stuff they cover is always funny, interesting, and intelligent. If you are a spandex riding cyclist, you might not get it. To you type of riders, quote, best day ever,
yes,
unquote. Thanks, Carl. And then freedivers_33 says, finally, a podcast about cycling that doesn't focus on racing. Great stuff. Great podcast. Keep it up. Thanks, freedivers_33.
Awesome.
We appreciate it. If you guys want to leave us an iTunes review, it would be much appreciated. I think, from what I understand, the iTunes system goes pretty much exactly off of what people are saying. So if a lot of people like it, it becomes popular. It shows up on the front page. And as you know, we are all about whoring ourselves out to the public. So you want to help us with that, you can go to iTunes. If you've got your own story, if you got something that happened to you on the bus, anything else, you can give us a call. The number is 503. Oh, you know what? I need to read it. 503-847-9774. I almost have it memorized.
It's your own phone number.
Well, it's not. It's another one. It's 503-847-9774. My own personal phone number I don't give out. Thank you. The email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. So I think we're pretty much set to wrap up. Is there anything else from you, Aaron? Anything you have to contribute to this wide swath of good things?
I'm going to try to down the rest of this ginger
beer. Oh, look at you go. Can you do it? He's doing it. That's a lot of ginger all at once. No residue at the bottom.
No, there's still a little bit at the bottom. I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm, there you go. Well, your throat must be on fire. Good work, sir. No doubt it is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been the Sprocket Podcast. You can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us your feedback, please do, about the program, suggestions for topics, guests, drinks, anything you want to tell us. Even tell us how we suck, if you think indeed we do. Via email, the address once again, thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. The message line, once again, 503-847-9774. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. You can find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. Thanks to Hurtbird for our headline sounder. You can find them at hurtbirdmusic.com. My name has been Brock.
And I'm Aaron.
And this has been the Sprocket Podcast. We will see you next week.
Cheers.